5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Model Moon!
The dark side of the Huddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. On the January 2020 episode of Crypto Currently, we talk about the upcoming Cardano hard fork, DigixDAO liquidating their treasury, a new multi-currency metal cold storage wallet. We ruminate on why there aren't more women in crypto, and of course we talk about Akon, Akoin, and Akon City on the dark side of the Huddle Moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantech. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Stand by. Dark Side of the Huddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iThesound.com.
Huddle Moon!
All right, and we're back. This is our first episode of Crypto Currently in the current year, 2020. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much. Did you see the fight of the weekend, the Conor McGregor fight?
Yes, Conor smashed Cerrone. He got those shoulder butts, loosened him up, shoulder strikes, I guess you could say, and then he finished him. Pretty exciting. I was at the bar with a lady, had some beers, and it was a good weekend.
Well, the good lady knows a good bar, so I'm sure it was a nice event and a nice evening. So I thought it was a great time. I loved it. We started this podcast where we were watching UFC and was going on with UFC. We love the UFC. Everyone loves it. So crypto, UFC, they go hand in hand, I think. People like this kind of organized chaos.
Yeah, and chicken and beer go hand in hand, too, whether you're in Korea, where it's very popular, or where we had a little chicken and beer.
Oh yeah, all right, that's good.
Yeah, all right.
Cool. So it's the January 2020 crypto currently. There's a lot of stories to go over today. I think some of them are going to be more controversial than others. Some are going to be funny. Some are just going to be, you know, here's a story, move on.
So yeah,
let's have a look at let's see what we've got. But let's go into it then. So
yeah, we've got a little mix of big stuff. We're going to cover a couple big stories, we're in a couple small stories, and a couple that went under the radar, and end with a few funny ones. So first, I want to do a couple quick hits. So the U.S. Congress plans to exempt small crypto transactions from taxation. Because,
yeah, you know that, right? You've been looking forward to that.
Yeah, because right now it's really ridiculous. If you bought a cup of coffee or a beer or a salad with crypto, if you followed the letter of the law, you'd have to pay taxes on that every time if your crypto went up in value since you bought it. So only crypto hardcores like me do it. Like we've talked about before, the U.S. banking system works fine right now, but having a de minimis exemption of like $50 or $100 would be really great and help improve adoption here. So I hope that passes, but only time will see if the Congress goes along with that.
Yeah, well, it's good for the Americans for sure. I mean, under $200 is really small transactions. It's, you know, it's a nice night out at a bar, and that's it. And I think that that's fair. So, seems like the U.S. government is really making strides towards common sense, logic, things that are actually in the average person's mind about priorities and things of that nature. So, I'm quite happy to see this type of legislation. I'm sure you're much happier being a resident and citizen, so...
Yeah, and also, too, it's not like you're going to escape the tax man if you're buying a beer or a coffee here and there. You know, it's going to be, pennies, you know, really for the U.S. government. Another thing I want to talk about, so that's some good news when it comes to crypto taxes. Some bad news is that South Korea might impose a 20% tax on crypto gains. So, you know, before it was one of those countries where you didn't, they didn't tax crypto gains at all, but the tax man might be coming for you if you're a Korean resident or a Korean citizen. Not good news for you, Josh.
Yeah, that's not good news for me. If that actually does pass, all it will mean is that, you know, I will move to a different place to do trading. You know, there's crypto. There's absolutely no need to pay the government for trading or holding cryptocurrency. However, if that becomes a strict law, then, you know, we'll have to play it by ear and see what happens. I think one of the best things about South Korea is that it has been pretty open in terms of what you could do with cryptocurrency for the last, let's say, three years. So if they start to become a bit more aggressive, they do have Moon Jae-in as the president. He's a little bit more of a Bernie Sanders type of a fella. He's a little bit more socialist. He's definitely not a Bernie Sanders, though, so don't mistake what I just said there. But what I mean is he's more left-leaning than traditional South Korean politicians.
Yeah, definitely. And a couple other quick hits. Vodafone, I think it's the 8th big company to back out of Libra. And we had a Libra episode, and I think we both made some good predictions. I think you had a couple good ones, but I guess we're really not surprised to see this Libra thing kind of collapsing under the regulations and under the pressure.
Well, yeah, like we said in the first show 6 months ago in June, we said there's no chance that the US government says, yeah, make your own competitor to our fiat currency. Great. Be a financial, basically act like a financial institution, but don't have to comply with any of the financial regulations. That's going to go down fine. Of course, that was never going to happen. So everyone else has got cold feet. They thought that they could go through the, using the force of the name of Facebook and get an, you know, jump on the bandwagon almost, so to speak. But as soon as the law started nipping around the toes, they're like, oh, actually, yeah, we were just dipping our toe in the water. We don't really actually fancy jumping deep in there. So no, there's no head first movement in cryptocurrency, I think, especially in the United States, until the United States passes some coherent cryptocurrency legislation, which should be coming soon. So coming soon, TM, let's see what happens.
And the last thing I want to talk about today is Adam Back trashing Lightning, or he kind of said it's not reliable, doesn't really work well. And he says now we should start using liquid sidechains. So we've been hearing forever that Lightning is coming, Lightning's going to work, it's going to be cheap, it's going to be fast, it's going to be effective. And it seems like some of the people who are really into Lightning are kind of changing the script now. So I don't know if it's the end of the world, but you know, at one point you either got to put up or shut up, and Lightning's either going to work or it's not going to work.
Well, it might work, who knows, but you know, someone like that saying these types of things, it doesn't really bode well. So let's see. I think the wait and see approach, like we mentioned on a previous show, can't really work anymore in 2020 and beyond. You can't just let people say, all right, we'll update our roadmap in 3 months and you'll see what's coming. Trust us, believe us. There's not going to be room for that beyond 2020. This is literally the last quarter that that's going to be acceptable, I think, in cryptocurrency. So
yeah, definitely.
Lightning really does need to sort itself out. If it's working, great. If it doesn't work, the project needs to die. Capitalism needs to work at the end.
Yeah. You know? And speaking of what you just mentioned there, that really ties into what I want to talk about next, which is Cardano. And they actually are doing things. I really like Charles Hodgkinson. I listened to a lot of his interviews and followed the project closely. I think it's a project with a leader. Some people like that, some people don't, but I think he's a really competent leader. And they're
shout out Charlie.
Yeah, and it looks like Charles Hodgkinson, not Charlie.
No, I'm calling him Charlie out of endearment. An English person, you would put a Y on the end just to say we like someone. So my mate in Korea is Michael. I call him Mikey. My wife is Kang XX. I call her Kangy.
Okay.
Charlie was my term of endearment for
Charles. Okay, gotcha. I thought you were...
I've actually met him in Seoul, and I actually took his course in 2017. He's got a course on Udemy called How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Crypto. That was one of the great courses for me that really pushed me on in to pursue this industry a little bit more. So
yeah, I don't know, Josh,
Charlie boy.
Why do I even doubt you? I thought you might have been confusing with someone else, but again, I'm wrong.
Don't be daft. He's the CEO of Input Output Hong Kong, IOHK. Cardano co-founder of Ethereum.
Yeah.
When I met him in Seoul, he basically took a look at our at the time we were running a HiCon node live at a booth, and he was like, "Yeah, that's a blockchain." And I was like, "Well done."
nice.
I was like, "Good lad." So we were definitely building a blockchain. Contrary to recent reports, we were actually building a blockchain. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Right. Well, anyways, they've got their hard fork coming up, I think, in mid-February. And one of the big things in the hard fork is going to be the Euros Burros Byzantine Fault Tolerant Consensus Protocol. We can't really get into it here, but it's a kind of a big improvement when it comes to security. And also, too, they're doing a couple other things. They mentioned that they're going to get integrated with the Ledger hardware wallet integration, which hasn't happened yet. A little disappointing, but it's good to see they're finally doing it. I know I was actually trying to help someone who wanted to put their Cardano on their Ledger, and I said, like, it's not, you know, you really can't do it yet, or if you can, it's pretty difficult. So they're doing a couple good things, and they're one of the projects I would say definitely in my top five, maybe top three, where they're actually building things and they're moving forward.
Well, he actually has a really smart mind, and he can see, well, you know, some people say the best way to predict the future is to create it, right? And honestly, this is Charles Hoskinson to a T. He's created several amazing projects in his time, and now he's worth a sizable amount of money. And to be honest, we're really just getting started in this Bitcoin game. So he's one of those guys that are creating the future, and I really admire the guy. But that said, actually, for a bit of fun, he lost a lot of weight too. He went on a special diet and he slimmed down super hard. So good on you, Charlie.
What kind of diet was he doing?
I don't know the details. So if any of the Charles Hoskinson crew in Input Output Hong Kong or in the Cardano crew, they can just say what diets he's been on. Put it in the comments. That'd be quite funny.
Did you know I'm doing a diet these days?
What diet? HODLing diet?
It's more like intermittent fasting. I kind of eat in a 3 or 4 hour time window so I can get that chiseled beach body and just flex on all the no-coiners.
That's good. You got to flex on the no-coiners. Fine. What I'd say is that's a decent diet, to be fair. I mean, there are only a few diets that work. Calorie restriction and exercise, obviously. But then again, what you put into your body, like certain calories are different. The timing you do it, if you do 8 hours of a feeding window and then you just put in protein and then exercise, you're going to lose weight at the end. Like, what can your body do? The body's got no option. It doesn't have loads of carbs in it and all that other shit. So,
and you want to say anything else about Charlie? I cut you off there.
No, he's a good lad. I don't know him too well. I've only met him once and it was a fleeting moment, but the impression was good fella, and what he's actually done speaks for itself. You know, he's built several decent projects, and Cardano is going from strength to strength. So, one thing I wanted to say about that. Yeah, that's true. Back when it was just being launched, when Cardano was super, 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 super low, it was like a cent or 2 cents. Filled my bags with Cardano. Enjoyed it. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. That was a good bag fill.
Definitely. And I know that when it was really going parabolic, you know, I had a little bag of EOS myself, Cardano, or not EOS, Cardano ADA. And I know I didn't get in quite that early, but I know at one point it went almost to $1.50 or so. And one thing I want to tell to our newer listeners, if you didn't know, is that Charles Hoskinson also was a co-founder of Ethereum. So if you're a big Ethereum fan, you should be a big Charles Hoskinson fan. So let's move on to our next one. So we recently interviewed Isaac. That episode has already been released. But one thing Isaac was really into was DAOs. So a decentralized autonomous organization. A lot of them are built on the Ethereum network. And one big story was that DigixDAO votes to liquidate a $64 million treasury. So I believe before they raised almost half a million of ETH, worth $7 million at the time. And basically, a DAO is where you can vote in a decentralized way on funding projects, funding goals, funding technological development. And they recently voted to liquidate their $64 million treasury, returning funds to investors. So although it's in some ways, I think this is a good story, because although they didn't really fund things, didn't really work out the way they wanted, they're able to get their funds back just through a decentralized DAO. And I think that's pretty interesting. And I think that'll actually make people less reluctant to invest in DAOs, because, you can vote on funding projects, you can vote on getting your money back, which projects to fund. And I think all DAOs can be structured differently depending on how comfortable you are locking your money up in something. So I think that was a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, I agree. It's a pretty interesting story. The only, twist in the tail, or the really amazing thing, is just how few people were actually involved, Only 52 votes were cast. So 52 votes to basically decide $60-odd million or something. That's pretty impressive that it can be done in that fashion. Also, it does betray the truth a little bit that not many people are interested in gold on blockchain at this moment in time.
Yeah. Well, I would say too, I'm kind of curious. I haven't looked into it that deeply, but only 52 votes. That's either that a lot of people didn't vote or forgot about it, or the people that invested in this were like serious bag holders that invested quite a large amount. So I would guess, I would lean a little bit towards the latter. There's probably people who invested quite a bit, and maybe it wasn't so spread out with like smaller investments, I would guess.
Yeah, sure. But, we've had a few conversations with Matthew, the gold bug, and I actually introduced him to this very DAO back in 2016, and he really liked it. And he might have even been one of the voters, who knows. But my point is that it's only 52 votes that were cast to basically decide this amount of money. It's quite impressive. It's an example of a DAO working, but it's also an example of how there isn't still that much interest in the DAO quite yet, but we're ahead of the curve as always. Let's see what happens in 2020, 2021, and going forward.
Yeah, I don't think there's much more to say about that. I want to get into another topic, women in the crypto space. So if you're listening to this, there's a pretty good chance that you're not a woman. And if you've been to conferences, meetups, it's really a male-dominated space. And I read Kelso's article on CoinSpice about women in crypto. Let me see what it says here. It says, without women, peer-to-peer electronic cash will fail. I highly recommend it. Maybe we'll link it in the show notes. And basically, most of the conferences I go to, it's mostly men. The local meetups, I would say it's almost, a lot of times it's only men. 10 to 20 people, it's only men, or maybe there's a woman like who was brought by her boyfriend or husband. But I don't really see a lot of women in the crypto space. And that's one area where if women get into crypto, it's going to grow a whole lot. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I think, obviously, maybe there's fewer female programmers. They're less into the tech, into the, typing on the computers, doing all that nerdy stuff. But also, too, I think it comes to politics. A lot of the people in the crypto space are more maybe libertarian, freedom oriented, anarchistic, maybe conservative. And that's also where you see a lot of men in the crypto space. And yeah, just being interested in finance and money and how it works. And I think we can improve it, but I don't know how much we can improve it. Maybe we can move it up a little bit, but I don't think it's ever going to be a 50-50 male-female split. I mean, listen to this podcast. We've interviewed only one female guest. Listen to other crypto podcasts or other crypto conferences. There's really not many women in the space. So he kind of proposes some solutions, make it interesting, easy, make it sexy. But I don't know if this is ever going to be solved, but maybe there's ways to move the needle a little bit. Josh, what do you think?
Wow. I mean, this is actually a massive topic. There are so many, I don't know, things to be said about this topic in general. From a societal point of view and the tech, this can get quite political. Honestly, we're in 2020 now. We're in current year. Justin Trudeau, favorite saying, current year. So therefore, that means everybody can do whatever they like, right? So if you are a male and you want to do a traditionally female thing, like be a nurse or, I don't know, be a speech therapist or something like that, fine. There's no issue. If you're a female and you want to be an engineer or you want to, build cars, I don't know, then why not? There's nothing stopping you. But what we've seen, and I think we both know Dr. Peterson, he's got a famous book, 12 Rules for Life. Some of his stuff that he's covered is quite extensive, and he's been on the Joe Rogan podcast and talked about this at length, and it's essentially that you can decide what you do with your life, and we're at the point now where, you know, I'm on the other side of the world to you, we're 14 hours away, and we're doing this because we want to do it. If there was somebody who wanted to get involved and they were female, we wouldn't be like, no, you're not allowed because you're female. That's stupid. So I don't think that the world actually works like that anymore. There is really nothing stopping anyone doing anything if they really want to do it. Of course, having more women that are interested in cryptocurrency is going to be good for the industry of cryptocurrency. There's going to be 50% of the population that are going to be interested in this field. It could potentially double the size of the industry. However, this idea that you can then say, right, let's put a quota on the amount of women that needs to be there. And I know that that's not what you're saying, but some people might suggest that that's the quote-unquote solution to this quote-unquote problem. What I'm saying is that there isn't a problem and there's no solution. This is freedom, and people want to do it because they're naturally attracted to it or not.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So yeah, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you too. That was kind of another thing I was going to mention, is that, you know, there are no geek gatekeepers at any of the conferences or any of the meetups saying this is men only. I think when women do come, you know, everyone's been very friendly, very welcoming. Almost you don't want to be too much, because it almost sounds like pandering or disingenuous. So yeah, I think it's not, like you said, it's not really a problem. There's not much of a solution. If more women come into the space, that's great. And I think it'll just come with time as it becomes more popular, as it becomes more user-friendly, as it becomes more normy, should we say. But yeah, I think...
I mean, there are some great women in the space that we know. Lindsay Jew, we've had her on the show, like, knows her stuff, really passionate about the industry. Great. Roxana, she knows what she's talking about. Marina... Crypto Marina, she knows what she's talking about. I work with a few female colleagues at Salamantex. They know what they're talking about. I mean, it doesn't preclude you from being able to add to the debate or to add to the tech by your gender. No one cares about that at all these days. What we need to avoid, though, is these kind of ways of viewing the world that because there are fewer women in tech, because there is a smaller percentage of women that decide of their own free will to go into blockchain, that there's a problem with the space. I mean, I don't really see the same thing when it comes to nursery teachers and stuff like that. There's
let me jump in there.
For 50% of men need to be nursery teachers. Yeah. Doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I think we've sussed that out pretty well. Obviously, you can look at the supermodeling industry. You know, all the biggest supermodels, the richest ones, they're all females, but that hasn't stopped Blockade from becoming a HODL model and you know, getting his foot in the door.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with when it comes to modeling, like Cade manages to carve out a nice niche for himself. Or do you say a niche in America? A niche or a niche?
I would say a niche.
Okay. So you carved out that nice little space, and then here you are penetrating the wall of female supermodels, and then you get in there, you're the HODL model, you do what you think. This is exactly the point, though. This is the same thing. And it's almost like this conversation isn't really allowed.
Yeah, but I've noticed, Josh, that my HODL models on my Instagram page don't get as many views as some of the supermodels. So I don't know if that's a conspiracy or if it's just the free market doing its thing. I'm not really sure.
Well, we'll have to see about that. I'm not sure.
Maybe we'll link my Instagram in the show notes. You know, so give me a heart, give me a like.
I will do. But the final thought on this is, of course, women get involved because you are 50% of the population. Great, wonderful. Keep going, do more of it. Get involved in blockchain. Download a wallet. Interact with it. If you like it, pursue it further. But no one's forcing you, and also no one's preventing you either.
Yes. All right. Well, let's move on. We're going to talk about these two people again. You know, people say we shouldn't talk about them, but we always end up talking about them anyways. So Craig Wright, the Tulip Fund, it's kind of come and passed. And in an interview, Craig Wright is still 99.9999% sure that he'll get access to the Bitcoin fortune. For me, it's like, you know, it's kind of either got to put up or shut up. I don't think he's ever going to get access to the so-called Tulip Fund. This trust, the secret courier riding on the crypto bicycle. I'm not really sure if the keys are ever coming. And I think at this point, although, some people think he's smart, he's read a lot, maybe he's angry. You know, at some point, you either got to have the keys or you don't. But as far as I know, maybe he's done other things, but it doesn't look like he has access to the keys, and he ever will. But if he doesn't have access to the keys and no one else has access to the keys, maybe Satoshi's dead, maybe he's locked him up forever, that's only going to be a really good thing for the supply of Bitcoin if you're a Bitcoin holder. All right, so Josh, I'll let you respond to that. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, can't really disagree with what you've said. It's pretty shocking, to be honest, that he keeps on saying any element of doubt of the fact that it could be him. I mean, at this point, really does need to put up or shut up, let's see. But there's still that 0.00001% chance that he does have the keys to that 1 million odd Bitcoin, which is over $1 billion. It might even be nearly $9 billion. I don't know the exact number. It's a lot of money. And should he be able to take control of that, then that will definitely change the fortune of the whole market for sure. But at this point, it seems highly unlikely. However, as a contrarian, you got to see what happens. And you just can't buy into the crowd narrative because you've got to literally think for yourself. So at this point, my spidey sense is telling me that this is not going to happen. But there's still that inkling of doubt. So I've talked about this with you a few times before. I did have a little bit of money in BSV on the upside. I thought, yeah, it's very unlikely it's going to actually crash super hard. The upside is really good. So I was quite happy with that. You could see that months in advance if you had like a semblance of a brain.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, let's move on. I want to talk about another favorite person or hated person in the crypto space. Peter Schiff, who recently tweeted that he forgot his password or forgot his seed phrase or both. And it kind of brings me into a little bit of a different segue, which is how to not lose your coins in 2020. So we've always heard the sob stories about, you know, looking for their laptop in some dump or, you know, they've lost all their money. They don't know where it is. So they're talking about some different methods that might be more user-friendly or safer, but I think also in some ways riskier. So there's something called social recovery. And the idea behind it being you'd call on guardians, pre-selected entities that are authorized to reassign control of the specific amounts. I think, you know, if you really trust someone, that might be good. But then also you're relying on someone else's trust. You know, if you really want to do that right now, I think you could just give your private keys to someone you trust. You wouldn't need to rely on a third party wallet. I think Argent is one of these wallets. There's also a few others. But there's criticism of social recovery. You could be blackmailed. They could be like, you want access to your private keys, you have to give us some of it. Or they could take all of it. Another thing they're thinking about is using a private key based on the user's password or email. Well, if you did that, if you knew their email or password, you might be able to find out what their key is. And right now, you can already use multi-sig wallets between several people. That might be a better solution. So, I mean, I think some big people in the space said, yeah, you know, it's not good that people are losing their funds. So I think there need to be more solutions, but I also think this could actually be worse and not better. Maybe if you're really don't trust yourself, maybe put it, have it stored away in some other thing, like put it on an exchange you trust. But yeah, I don't know if these solutions are really what's gonna make the space move forward.
Well, you made a lot of good points there, and you can't really disagree with any of them, mate. So I would say overall quite a bad idea, but it's gonna be necessary, you know, in the future. As you get more people that get involved in cryptocurrency, whether they're aware of it or not, so it could be blockchain adoption without being aware of how the technology works. At some point, these types of services are going to become expected just because they already exist in traditional finance. So some of the crossover people are going to be starting to think, all right, let's say, for example, you died. That happens. Unfortunately, we're all gonna die eventually. You have to then have a system where certain assets can be passed on to other people, and it can be a third party that has to be the arbitration between the deceased and the living, right? So this is going to become a more and more prevalent thing in, well, I don't know necessarily right now, but in the next 10 years, it definitely will be. So these types of services will have a use case. So I think if you're a pure crypto anarchist or whatever, they don't like it because not your keys, blah, blah, blah. But being pragmatic, then I think it makes sense. So that's my thought on this.
Well, let's bring it on to another thing of how to store your crypto. And I'm not really sure what wallet Peter Schiff was using, but a lot of people trust the Trezor or the Ledger. Some people just use a second phone. You know, a lot of those wallets, they never leave the phone, and they just have the internet turned off or the Wi-Fi turned off. And then they can, a lot of people use that because it's the user interface and the user experience is so much better. You know, even for me, using a Ledger is kind of annoying sometimes. But another thing you can do is cold storage with the Cassatius coins or cold storage coin. I have a cold storage coin actually here right next to me. But the thing with this one is that you can only store one crypto on it. So this one I have next to me is Ethereum. I can only store Ethereum on it. You can get a Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, maybe five or six others. But this new one, the Ballet crypto wallet, it's similar, but it kind of looks more like a credit card. And the cool thing about this one is that you can actually store multiple currencies on the same coin. You have an app, and I think last time I checked, it was like you could store like 50 or 60 different cryptos on the same card. So it's similar to the cold storage coin. You got a little sticker, and when you pull it off, you got the private key. So you could bring it around, or in one of the videos I mentioned, they could just pull the sticker off, or you could just take a picture of it and leave the card like in a safe somewhere. So you could always put money on, but it would be very safe. And I think it's laser etched on, like the cold storage coin. So even if there's a fire, it burns down. As long as you have it, you're pretty safe. It does have some downsides in that, you know, you can't, you know, there's no pin. So if someone steals it, it's pretty easy to get it. There's no recovery phrase. But on the other hand, it's a little easier to use. And maybe it's something I would look at for maybe giving to my mom or someone else. I know my mom is thinking about buying crypto finally after a lot of prodding. So she might throw a little money in the game. And I think this is a good solution, especially because you don't want to buy a bunch of coins for different currencies. She could put 10 different ones on there, a basket of currencies on one cold storage coin. So I think this is innovative. I like it, and I just like giving people more options. If you don't like it, don't use it. But you know, compared to like the Ledger or Trezor, it's super simple. You just got an app. I watched some tutorials on it. It seems pretty basic, so I'm excited about it.
All right, cool. So it's like shit or get off the pot, basically.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think it's cool. What I would just... I don't know, man. Let's move on to the next topic.
All right, you're not a big fan of the cold storage coins? All right. Well,
to be honest, you've got to be so adept at what you're doing. You've got to actually know a lot of things to be able to do all the things that you described in the last 2-3 minutes, right? There's such a steep learning curve, and that's the problem. So the only way we're really going to meet mass adoption is through making it so easy that people don't even know it's blockchain. I think that that's the future. So I think it's a nice stepping stone to get to there. It definitely is one of the steps along the way to get to there, but I don't think it's the destination. I think it's one of the steps on the journey.
Okay, yeah, let's move on then. Let's talk about our favorite country to talk about in the crypto space, Venezuela. So Venezuela is opening up a crypto casino that's going to use the petro, which is supposedly backed by oil. So the country's basically falling apart. They don't really have money or food or healthcare or anything else. They're telling their citizens to raise rabbits, and people are fleeing the country like crazy. We actually interviewed someone, a Venezuelan expat, telling us some horror stories about the country. You should check out our interview with Manny Ramey if you guys are interested to learn more. But basically, this is like putting a small band-aid on a gaping wound on your neck and the blood's just still flowing out. That's kind of the analogy I would give. Josh, do you have any take on the crypto casino? Are you going to go all in on black at the crypto casino in Venezuela?
No. Definitely not. I mean, the crypto casino is a disgrace. So, I like the idea of a real casino that accepts crypto, or an online casino that is crypto-based. I just don't like this idea of the government encouraging their citizens to gamble away the last thing that they've got. That's terrible.
Yeah, let's move on. Yeah, one of my dreams is to open a crypto casino. So if you got some good ideas, you're a programmer, get in touch with us on the dark side of the HODL moon. But now we've got some bright news from Venezuela. And it's actually, in addition to all the other problems we've mentioned about Venezuela, they don't really have good internet. So a Venezuelan team is working on a Bitcoin mesh network based on offline radios. So you're going to be able to connect to the network using long-range radio waves. They've got two different versions. They've got Terpiel and Harpia. Harpia is a simpler module that works on the Raspberry Pi. The Terpiel is a little bit fancier, I think. And so basically, if you have limited internet or you know disruptions in the internet, you can use this. One downside is you need to at some point be connected to a node. So you know, some ideas I would have are like, maybe you know, you connect to a node, you know, just outside of Venezuela in a neighboring country, and you could get onto the network, or you could connect to a node in a different part of Venezuela that has internet access. And it also has a couple other positive use cases. So it's also seems to be very private because you're using radio waves, so it's going to be pretty hard to track. But I thought that's a pretty interesting project. I think maybe it's going to be more into the third world, but I've read articles before where they've already tested it out. It works, but I'm interested to see if it goes live and we see transactions through long range radio waves.
I'm only laughing at your consistent use of third world. I mean, you know, it's the current year, Cade. You know, we've got to be politically correct now. Developing world. They're on the right track. They're doing the right things.
Yeah,
part of the planet.
Josh, I would definitely agree. Venezuela's developing. They're on the right track for sure. But yeah, I'll be wary of that for next time.
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to some of our old shows today, and like the third world is a common thing. It's just the developing world. That's all right. Don't worry about it. But I, based on this, I would just say, why not? It makes sense. It fits the circumstances of this developing country. They have this technology that's available to them. There are lots of resources that are going unused right now. Completely makes sense for that situation, that context. So it's a great project. I hope that it succeeds. It's going to free the Venezuelan people from the clutches of our favorite topic, socialism.
Definitely. Yeah. And just to get into a little bit more on the tech here. So basically, you'd never have your phone or home IP address linked to your identity. So this would make it a very privacy-focused tech, too. Even if you were in, developed world, or if you're in the developing world, it would be a use case in both countries. So yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. Maybe in my local meetup, we'll get a radio wave transmitter set up and try and send some crypto on the radio wave network connected to the node. I'm excited about it.
That sounds like a good idea. I think that's a really good idea. And then on the map, you can like draw lines around developing and developed countries, and then you'll know how to address them in the future.
Yeah, I just got to keep it real, Josh. But yeah, I'm trying to get with the times. The only thing I focus on is crypto, not political correctness.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have to be politically correct. I agree with that. I'm sure if you're offended, send Cade an email. I'm sure he cares. So, right, next one. Let's go.
All right. So the next one, we're going to end up with a fun one here. So Akon, a huge music superstar, at least back in the day, he had a couple huge hits. He's creating Akon and Akon City in Senegal. So they're gonna have apparently their own cryptocurrency. He's kind of envisioning it as apparently as some sort of real world Wakanda, some sort of place that's really gonna be spurred with growth with this Akon and Akon City. I think he was gifted 2,000 acres by the Senegalese president, Macky Sall. So that's a pretty nice gift, but hopefully he's trying to pay it forward. Apparently now, though, we've talked about actually having a project and not vaporware. Apparently there's no white paper, there's no anything, but it'll be interesting to see if a city where I think all the payments have to be with Akon, if it takes off or if it's another thing that just kind of crashes and burns.
Well, you know, Nah 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 Nah, that song, that was a good one. And he did a collab with Lonely Island. So he's definitely good at putting out bangers. But honestly, this is bangers and fucking mash from a UK perspective, because Wakanda's not real. And this idea is a joke, to be honest. Right.
Josh, explain bangers and mash terminology or slang for the non-UK listeners.
What? People don't know what bangers and mash is? All right, it's sausages and mashed potatoes. That's what it is, bangers and mash.
But what, But what does it mean in a slang context? Does it mean it's crazy or a little loco or?
It doesn't make any sense. Honestly, what Akon's trying to do doesn't make any sense. But he's definitely just enjoying himself, so give him that. But I like the analogy that you mentioned about Wakanda. Wakanda is a fantasy land. The only place in Africa that was never actually colonized by anybody was a place called Liberia. But it was later colonized by African Americans that settled very many different places along the coast of Liberia. If you can do yourself a history lesson, look up the Liberia War. It's pretty bad. There's a guy called General Butt Naked. He was made famous on Vice. I was actually watching a video about this last night, so it's quite a coincidence that you were talking about this. It is an absolute unfettered disaster. So tune in, go on YouTube, go and check it out. Just go and look up the real Wakanda, which is Liberia, the Liberian experiment. It's been an independent country for nearly 200 years. It was like the 1800s when it was a free country. And basically, they've not done too well with it. They've made a lot of mistakes, a lot of errors, and oh boy, let's not repeat that mistake. Let's learn from history, fellas. Let's not repeat it.
Yeah, all I know is I want to go to the Huddle Moon right now, nah, nah. With my moon bags right na na na. See Kring candles all around right na na na. This is the Dark Side of the Huddle Moon podcast right na na na.
Well done, that was great, Cade. Well done. So I think that's it for Wakanda is not real and you know, blockchain stuff for today's episode of Crypto Currently. It's January 2020, and we'll see you next time on the dark side
of the Huddle Moon.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the Huddle Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlemoon.com.
Huddle Moon!